Hey everybody, this is Jet for Sick Drummer Magazine, and as part of our interview series, we have brought in our next guest. He is Aaron Steckoner of the band Interloper. You might also know him from Rings of Saturn and some live stints with The Faceless and Born of Osiris, Abiotic, and all kinds of others. Thank you for being here with us today, Aaron.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
So, Aaron, when did your interest in drumming begin? Were you like one of them kids banging on pots and pans in your parents' kitchens?
You know, not really. I always struggle answering this question because I think when I boil it down back in the day, I just remember whenever there were music rooms that I was around. Like, I grew up in church, so, you know, a lot of them rooms had, you know, stages with full instrument setups. And I think I just always walked toward the drums. And so I think when it came time to get a, you know, to play an instrument, I think that's what I wanted to play. I also think that I was a really big fan of Dream Theater when I was a kid, when I was like 8, 9, 10.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I think, you know, Mike Portnoy's kit was just like huge and really cool. So like the first day I got my drum set, I got back home and my dad put on like a Dream Theater live DVD and he's like, okay, here's your homework. Just watch this guy play drums. It was pretty dope.
Now, were you active in like school bands in high school and college, or do you have any kind of formal training outside of school?
Yeah, totally. I had drum lessons when I started, and in middle school, I played in the school band program, which was led by a really great director. His name is John Schutze. I still talk with him and teach through him sometimes. And yeah, he just had a different approach than a lot of school bands. And we also had an after-school music program that also was held in the summer. And then in high school, I went to Performing Arts High School here in Southern California. And then I went to college for a semester and I was in a couple of the jazz groups there as well. So yeah, all throughout school, I was playing drums in programs and whatnot.
And now, did you start out, like you said, you went to like an arts type of a high school. So did you start playing out like jazz, that kind of a thing?
Well, I started playing jazz and stuff like that in middle school. And I would say, I mean, on my own time and when I first started playing drums, what I wanted to do was rock music and stuff like that, and progressive rock music in particular when I was young. But yeah, in middle school and all throughout high school and in college, that was pretty much all I did formally was jazz studies.
So you started out doing these jazz studies and ended up in the technical end of death metal. So how did that all kind of take place there, Aaron?
Yeah, I know. It's a little funny when you think about it. You know, I mean, both schools definitely involve a lot of discipline, you know, whether it's jazz or, you know, like extreme metal. As far as drumming goes, yeah, both of those fields have a lot of discipline involved. I mean, so like I said, growing up, I loved progressive music and progressive metal and progressive rock. I wasn't into extreme metal with, you know, screams and blast beats and anything like that when I first started, but I eventually got into it, you know, on my own time. So in middle school, you know, alongside playing jazz, I was really into Lamb of God, and then somebody got me into Opeth. And then when I went to high school, I think I was wearing a Lamb of God shirt when I was a freshman, and this girl that was a senior came up and she was like, hey, this is my friend's band, check him out. And she gave me Akeldama, the first Faceless CD.
Oh, boy.
And I didn't like it at first. Yeah, I really didn't like it, you know, all the blast beats and all the screaming and stuff. But I got into it, you know, and I think like my sophomore year, I went to my first death metal concert. It was Summer Slaughter 2010, I believe. There's a lot of good bands like Decapitated and The Faceless played. And mm-hmm. But anyway, so yeah, I loved playing jazz, but I also loved metal. And I think when I was in high school, I started a local band, just like a progressive metal band. And that's kind of where it took off, you know, and that's where I realized that that's what I really wanted to do, was to be in a band and play in a band full time. But yeah, I mean, I always loved playing jazz, and my parents both raised me on an eclectic range of music. So, you know, nothing like being a fan of one genre has never impeded on being a fan of another.
So you were pretty much taught jazz style, your basic rudiments and stuff like that, right? So you taught yourself then metal drumming, which is like total different coordination now, you know what I mean? Needed like for jazz, and now you're throwing double bass into that mix and all that crazy speed, and you know, how did you teach yourself how to do this extreme drumming now when, you know, you were taught in a jazz style?
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, yeah, so I was self-taught when it comes to metal drumming. I think that for sure, though, the private lessons that I had when I was younger, as well as the jazz studies that I had, kind of embedded the discipline in me needed to get better at death metal type of drumming. So even though nobody was there showing me the ropes of metal drumming, I kind of knew what it took as far as the discipline aspect, you know. So really I just played along to death metal bands when I was young. That's kind of how I first started doing it. I played along to a lot of Opeth, and I played along to the Faceless a lot, and I played along to a lot of Decapitated. And I'm sure there are a bunch of other, you know, bands with blast beats that I played along to, but those are the three bands for sure that I know I played along to the most when I was young. And honestly, that was really it. I didn't really practice anything formally. I didn't have a lot of like exercises and endurance runs when I was younger. That didn't really come till a couple years into me touring, when I would talk to other metal drummers and I started, you know, practicing specific exercises to get speed up and to build up my technique better. And, you know, that's when I got the double stroke technique down on kick drum and stuff like that. So yeah, it honestly wasn't for a while until I actually started doing, you know, legit specific exercises when it comes to metal drumming.
Like what kind of exercises did you do to improve this now?
So a lot of it, you know, if you want to play fast, you got to play slow. So a lot of it is just lower to mid-tempo endurance exercises, like just playing, you know, eighth notes on one hand, over and over for, you know, 2 to 5 minutes, and doing the same thing on your left hand, and progressing and doing the same thing on the feet, and then, you know, doing a combination of those exercises, you know, so maybe like playing 16th note split between your two hands, and then, you know, anything you can imagine from there. But basically, you know, the same muscles that it takes to play, you know, eighth notes at 240 beats per minute is the same muscles that it takes to play eighth notes at 150 beats per minute. So you're building up that muscle memory and you're building up that muscle strength with endurance exercises at those lower tempos. And that's essentially getting you up there to be able to play those higher tempos.
So is it easier for you to play the higher tempos or the lower ones?
I would say like lower mid tempos. I mean, these days, you know, because as you mentioned, I have played with the Faceless and with Rings and with Abiotic, and those are all really fast, really high tempo bands. But these days, I haven't been playing as fast. I mean, to be honest, I have never really felt like necessarily like a technical death metal, like blast beat oriented drummer. Like people know me as that because I've played in those kind of bands. But growing up, like that wasn't, in my opinion, that's not my strong suit. You know, like a lot of the times I cheated my way through these bands, and all I mean is like I would do double strokes on the kick instead of single strokes. And a lot of times, like when I would do blast beats, rather than doing just like, you know, straight alternating, you know, Euro blast between my hands, or like playing all of the blast notes on one hand, I would split it with this blast beat. A lot of people call it the Dirk blast, or the cross blast, or the switch blast. Yeah, okay, so yeah. I'm sure you're familiar. Huh?
Dirk Verbeuren.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, it looks cool, and obviously it's a legitimate technique, but it's a way to save energy on my hands so that I'm not just pumping out the same, you know, eighth notes going all the way through. So, I mean, yeah, you know, there are guys that I think just have it better than me, to be honest, like John Longstreth and Ken Bedini and Jesse Bueller and Nils from Dark Funeral. Like, you know, I mean, obviously there's a plethora of other guys, Dave from Cattle Decapitation. And I relate and identify more alongside the, like, you know, lower mid-tempo but still heavy-hitting drummers, kind of like Mario from Gojira or like Eloy from Sepultura. I mean, I don't consider myself as good as those guys, but that kind of style of drumming, you know, like, it's still intense, it's still extreme metal drumming, but it's not like, you know, death metal drumming. That's kind of where I find myself now. So that's what I would say is easier for me, like hitting really hard, hitting, you know, in like the 150 to 210, maybe 220 range is kind of pushing it. But that's where I'm most comfortable these days.
And, you know, of course, I had to stalk your socials a bit yesterday. And I saw,
okay.
And I saw a post you made about how fake drumming kills you. So care to elaborate on this?
Oh, geez. Yeah. I really incriminate myself.
Uh-huh.
No, it's okay. Well, basically, I just saw something and I've seen something a lot recently, and it's just drummers that, okay, you know, on a record, you're going to edit your drums, right, to be on the grid, and you're gonna oftentimes sample replace or sample blend. You know, I mean, so much modern metal these days, you know, the drums on a record are pretty similar to being programmed drums, which is just, I mean, I wish it wasn't that way, but it is the way it is. That's how metal production works these days, and it's fine, and it's whatever. I mean, you know, this last record we did, this Interloper record, I tracked it, and we have a sample blend on the drums, and they're edited, but, like, they're edited pretty loose, you know? They're not as gridded as most metal albums, but anyway, I digress. So back to this whole fake drumming thing. I think it's so much different when you are making videos and posting them on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube, whatever, on TikTok, and it's so obvious that what you're playing on the drums as far as what the camera is capturing is not what's actually being heard. I see a lot of drummers, I mean, it's basically like they're programming a drum fill and like a drum beat, you know, in, you know, Get Good Drums or Superior Drums or whatever, and then they're miming drums along to it and then splicing that together and posting up a video clip and, you know, like, advertising it as legit, and then all these drummer kids and metal fans that don't know any better, you know, see that and they're like, oh, this is what drumming sounds like, this is what drumming is, and then, you know, all these other drummers that, you know, play for real get compared to these guys who sound like machines because they are playing along to a machine. You know, so like when they're playing really fast fills and really fast blast beats and I'm watching the drummer and he's using like a finger technique on the snare, but every hit that he's doing on this blast that's at like, you know, 220 BPM playing eighth notes is all like rim shots, you know, it's all like max velocity. It's all the same hit, you know, doing like quad fills on the toms and every hit's maxed out and it's all the same. It's like, that's fake, you know, this is all fake, and you're making a video along to it and leading people to believe that this is what you sound like and this is what drums sound like, and they don't sound like that, and it's just a little silly to me.
Well, I don't think you're alone in that, because I've heard a lot of real drummers or trained drummers that have said the same thing. And it is, like you said, these kids don't know any better. So here you are, you know, you guys, you real drummers, and they're like, oh yeah, well, you can't play like this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know.
And it's all fake.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of what I do on social media, as far as when I will just type things out, like on Facebook or Twitter, a lot of times I'm being inflammatory and I'm kind of being a provocateur, you know, so I feel like I eat a lot of my words sometimes, you know, but yeah, like, the reason I said that was just because I saw something and I wanted to say something about it, but, you know, I don't want to call anybody out,
no,
I don't
no,
want to
no.
talk shit, you know, I don't want to be that person, but yeah, you know, I mean, I experienced that a lot firsthand, like, when I joined Rings of Saturn, because the guy that wrote the album before me and programmed the drums on the album before me, the Rings album, he's pretty well known really well known in, you know, like the extreme metal drumming community. And he has a couple really popular YouTube videos. And he is a great drummer. He's a really creative drummer. He writes really cool parts. You know, he can play shit really well, but these videos in particular are not real, right? Like, they're just mimed along to a programmed drum track, which is whatever. Like, you know, I guess that's fine. Like, the video did really well. His band's really successful in part because of that. You know, he's doing good business. But I got compared to this guy so many times. Like, on every video I ever put up, everything I ever did related to Rings of Saturn, people would compare me to this guy. And, you know, I mean, probably when I was younger, I was irritated or bothered by it, or maybe a little bit more sensitive. You know, now, obviously, I don't care, but it still is one of those things. It's like, all these kids think that that's what drumming sounds like, and all these kids think that this drummer's better and are going to grow up trying to play drums like that. And, you know, it's like, that's not a real instrument. That's a computer playing.
Well, kudos to you, Aaron, for taking the higher ground.
Yeah, I'm a really, really great person, so I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, when I read that, it was so open for easy, justified arguments, but everybody was kind of cool, you know? I think a lot of people know who you're talking about also when you say these things, but no names are mentioned. So anyways, moving along.
Yeah, right on.
So Aaron, writing your parts for Rings and writing your parts for Faceless, what was your style of writing for those bands, and what is your style now for writing for Interloper?
Well, for the Faceless, I haven't written any drum parts. I've only played live with the band. And for how long I've been playing live with the band, you would think that I would have written some music, because you would think that we would have written an album in that time span. But, you know, I mean, everybody knows this. The Faceless is kind of slower moving, which is fine. I mean, you know, that's never been my focus. Like, when I joined them, you know, I've toured with them before, and I've known Michael for a while, and I've known a lot of the past members for a while, so I know how the band operates, and I like playing the songs, I like playing live with them. But yeah, I'm not putting all of my eggs in that basket necessarily, just because, you know, writing wise and future of like what I want my career to be wise is more along the lines of Interloper, and I'll get to that. So with Rings of Saturn, my platform was open, and I had room to do things that I wanted to do. But at the end of the day, I had to play blast beats, you know, and I had to do crazy shit because of the nature of what Rings of Saturn's music is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of tech, a lot of things like that. But I think what I really like about those songs and how I differentiated myself apart from other, I guess, drummers and drum styles and drum parts in other extreme metal, deathcore bands is just a lot less of the typical single stroke, you know, fills kind of thing. And I played a lot more rudiments behind the kit, and definitely, you know, like a progressive approach to that music. And it's kind of hard to explain like exactly what I mean without, you know, just saying, oh, like I did a five stroke roll here, and, you know, like I did a flamadiddle fill in this part of this song. But, you know, like, yeah, that was my approach, is just, you know, put my style into this this environment, which is cool. But now with Interloper, it's like, okay, I'm not confined to a specific style. I don't have to play blast beats over here. I don't have to make all this shit super gnarly, and, you know, I don't have to cater to a deathcore, aliencore, Rings of Saturn fan base. I can just do me, and so that's what I did for this record. And a lot of my influence comes from, I would say my biggest influences are like Gavin Harrison from Porcupine Tree and Martin Lopez, previously from Opeth, and Martin Axenrot too. Like, his work on Watershed in particular when I was a kid is something that I was really influenced by. Those drummers are some big ones for me, as well as a lot of jazz cats from when I, you know, used to just be in school and be in music programs listening to these records. It's funny because a lot of the jazz records that I listen to, I know the names of you know, like the lead artists, like Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Monk, whatever. A lot of the drummers' names I don't know. So there are a lot of drummers that I'm heavily influenced by whose names I'm not even really sure about, which is, you know, kind of cool, I guess. But yeah, so all of those things, all of my influence culminate to what I am putting in this Interloper music. And like I said, it's just, it's more me than anything else that I've done, because I don't have really any limitations as to what I can do over this music.
So you and Miles from Ring started Interloper. So is that why you guys kind of started? So you guys could just do you, you know, just do your own thing. And I mean, what were your dreams and aspirations for Interloper?
So Interloper, the origin of it started when Miles and I were like 17. And so long story short, Miles and I met on Craigslist back in, I don't know, like 10 years ago. Because I was in a local band and we needed a guitar player. And he had an ad up on Craigslist. So we found him and we all started jamming and it was cool. But the music we were playing, Miles kind of wanted to venture into something else. So outside of that band, Miles and I would get together and jam along together. And we were a lot more, you know, technical death metal oriented. You know, a lot of it was like Obscura, Winter Sun type worship when we were kids. So, you know, the other band that we were in kind of dissolved and we kept working on Interloper, which was not named Interloper at the time. And then, you know, we got sidetracked. Like Miles started playing for a band called Animus. I moved to Miami and I played for that band Abiotic. And then I joined Rings of Saturn. And then a few months after I joined Rings of Saturn, we announced the Interloper was a band. At the time, it was just an online project. But then right after that, Miles joined Rings of Saturn. And so the whole time, you know, we're putting out a couple songs here, there, and talking about Interloper stuff. But, you know, we were distracted by Rings of Saturn. And then when we both left, we were going to focus on Interloper, and we did start focusing a lot on Interloper. But even so, I mean, you know, we had other gigs that we were filling in for. Like, I started playing with The Faceless, and I did those tours with Born of Osiris. At one point, Miles started filling in on guitar a little bit for Carnifex. And so, to be honest, it really wasn't until COVID hit and all the tours were canceled and all the bands that all of us were filling in for, you know, we weren't able to work with anymore on that level. And it, you know, it kind of put our focus on Interloper. So, which is what we wanted, you know. We want that to be our main band and our primary outlet, you know, of artistic expression. And, you know, that's what I want. That's the band that I want to tour with long term.
And now you guys put out your full length album. Actually, it's your debut full length album, right? Search Party, coming out in June on Nuclear Blast Records. So how excited are you for this release? And are these all fresh new songs on this album?
Yeah, all of the songs on Search Party are brand new. Yeah, we, yeah, I mean, very, very excited. Just, you know, for all of the reasons that you would imagine. I mean, it's just taken such a long time to get this out. And, you know, so much because of our distractions, right, and things like that. You know, it's just felt like it's taken forever. I mean, you know, we did our first tour back in 2018. And 3 years later, we're finally putting out our first album. It's kind of crazy. But, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm excited about it, and it's the first step in the direction of, like, you know, what we want people to identify our band as, and it's really exciting, and I love all the songs on the record. I hope people like them too. It definitely is the, I would say it's like the purest expression of who I am as a drummer, right? Mm-hmm. And the kind of music that I want people to affiliate me with, I'm really happy with the music that's on the record, you know? Like, not that I, you know, I am totally cool and fine with, you know, people affiliating me with the Rings of Saturn album that I did, you know, and other projects that I've played with, but this is like my cup of tea. This is in the realm of music that I'm really into and that I love to listen to and love to play to and whatnot. So, yeah, that's one of the biggest reasons, honestly, is that I want people to be like, oh, like this is Aaron's style. This is who Aaron is as a drummer. You know, I'm not like, he's not, pigeonholed to this,
right,
you know, extreme metal blast beat, you know, super fast, crazy drummer. Like this is really who I am. And this is my comfort zone.
So what's the lineup of the band? Let's hear who else is in it. So it's not all about you.
Damn. I was really hoping it would be all about me. I love talking about myself.
Well, just because you said you were a really nice guy, just throw the other guys' names in there too.
Oh my God. So Miles Dimitri Baker is my guitar player. And we've been, you know, like I said, we met 10 years ago. So we've been playing in bands together for a long time. And then Andrew Verretta is our singer and guitar player. I've known Andrew since 2013, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And him and I would say, probably share the most in common musically. And we've played in other projects together. Nothing super serious, except, well, we've played in the Faceless, but as far as like creative projects, you know, we've played in other ones, like we have another band with his brother called Brazen Tide. So really, really cool musical relationship with the two of them. That's all we have right now. We don't have a bassist or any other members. We want to get a full-time lineup, but we, you know, through trial and error over the years and, you know, finding new members and then, other, you know, members leaving and also being in other bands and kind of knowing how that goes. We are really, really serious about our band dynamic as bandmates and as coworkers and also as friends. And we're not just going to rush into hiring somebody on, you know, that might jeopardize that, both musically and personally. So, yeah, you know, when the time is right, we're going to have somebody full time. But right now, it's just the three of us.
So how would you describe the music on this album if you had to tell people what kind of music you guys are playing on this? Without pigeonholing yourself into something.
No, for sure. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would say that the most concise thing to say is just that we're a progressive metal band. That's what we are. I mean, there's a lot of dark and there's a lot of bright. There's a lot of singing and there's some screaming. I would say like the screaming aspect is not super extreme. You know, it's not very guttural. It's not, you know, like shrieky high. It's not, you know, like deathcore or super death metal. It's kind of like those yelly, you know, pitch screams like Gojira kind of style, you know, Lamb of God. It doesn't sound like Lamb of God, but, you know, just like that style, that realm of metal. That's where I would say we're at, for sure. Obviously, we've got, you know, things that make us unique and things that could tie us to other types of bands. But, yeah, in essence, I would say that that's what we are, a progressive metal band.
So tell us a little bit about how you went about writing the drum parts and from breakdowns to blast beats, Aaron.
From breakdowns to blast beats.
It sounds like a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, I'm honestly certain that podcast exists.
I think so. It does too.
Yeah, probably. How did I write the drum parts? So really what my process is, when I get sent a song, I listen to it a lot over and over just to get familiar with the song. And usually what I'll do is I'll have my bandmates send me a song without drums as well. And I'll just go to the kit and I'll just play along to that song over and over and over until I start to repeat myself. And then I find that that's, you know, the part that belongs in that section. And then I'll start to refine it. And I would say, Usually what my process is taking away. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is I'll go to the studio, you know, and I'll play this over and over. And then when I get an idea of what I want to play, I'll record it. And then oftentimes I'm trimming back. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'm trimming the fat and I'm cutting back and simplifying things. And, you know, kind of being specific about how maybe, you know, some snare hits that I'm doing interact with the vocals, or I like to have motifs throughout songs and throughout albums. So I'll use the same exact fill or like a slight variation of a fill, you know, to lead into this section and then to lead into the section at the end of a song, things like that. Recurring themes. That's what I like to do.
And it sounds good. And I listened to the album a couple of times, of course, before I did this interview, and it's very full. I mean, you could hear the guitars, you could hear everything, you know what I mean? It's not all Aaron. You could hear everybody else too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But I liked, for three guys, I mean, gosh, it sounds really, really rounded and super, super full. And it's a cool album. I mean, it's almost kind of fun to listen to because it's like you said, not every song is the same. Some are happy, some are kind of dark. And I don't know. Do you have like a favorite song off of it?
Yeah, my favorite song. You know, it's funny. I feel like that answer changes as
I know. Mine does
music.
Every time I listen to it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it changes over time. But, I mean, up until we started releasing singles, I had consistent favorites. And then as soon as we release singles, they kind of morph and change. And so, honestly, once the album's out, that's probably when I'll decide what my favorite one is. And honestly, when we play live, that'll determine it too, you know, because,
oh, yeah.
I mean, songs translate so different. But anyway, my favorite song for the longest time has definitely been Search Party.
Mm-hmm.
And alongside that would probably be that song Cheshire.
Oh, that's funny you mentioned that, because that's my favorite one too.
Really?
Yeah. It gives up, because it kind of, to listen to it, I mean, I'm sure it's different why you might like it because you play it, but to listen to it, it gives off like this emotional vibe or something to it. You know what I'm saying? It's just different, and it's kind of cool, and it's like emotional or something, you know, and none of you guys are emos, but I'm just saying the song that I know of.
I mean, that's the most emotional song to me personally on the record, both lyrically and musically. It's very temperamental and very sensitive as far as, you know, just the way it had to be played and the way that it was written. You know, we kind of had to be careful about it. And, you know, going back to what you're saying as far as the album being well-rounded and showcasing mm-hmm. everybody, I guess that's something that I forgot to mention when I was describing, you know, my writing process.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing, is serving the song. And, you know, the whole concept of the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So I care so much more about the music speaking rather than having the spotlight. You know, that's not my job as a drummer in this band. It's not to have the spotlight. It's to make the music good and to move people. And that's what I want to do.
Well, when you had mentioned how you were trimming the parts after you would hear it, that's what I'm imagining. Like, you're probably trimming it, like, guitars going here, you know, more here, and, you know, whatever. Because it sounded really, really good, and everybody just sounded fantastic on the album. And, of course, you know, Rio.
Yeah, that was so fun. That was a fun one.
And I actually sent a message to your singer yesterday, and I'm like, I'm listening to the album, and I'm not really watching. I mean, I have it playing in the studio while I'm doing things, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, this song sounds really familiar. And you know what, Aaron? You can't help but sing to that song, even if you never owned that album or CD or whatever, because whatever it was on, everybody knows that freaking song, you know. So it was just really fun way to end that album.
yeah that song is infectious, and you know, that song is played everywhere, you know. Yes. Every day it's played in so many places. But yeah, you know, I really liked ending the album with that. I structure the album order mm-hmm. in a very intentional way, you know. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be a lot of ups and downs, you know, so
yep.
Like the way it starts is very upbeat, and then the second track is like a lot moodier and slower, and then the third track is faster, you know, and then the middle never matters. But then the end, but then the end, like that song Idle Years is kind of moody. Mm-hmm. And then Cheshire is very moody, but a very different way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of like leaves you feeling pensive. And then I was like, all right, like for the last one, we got to put on that song Baring Teeth, because it's just like, okay, here's the end. Like, you know, maybe you're left sad or you're left like, you know, really in your feels after that song Cheshire. Here's like a really fast grip or rip it metal song, you know, and then just to have fun, we'll top it off with a Rio cover. Yeah, you know, I want, yeah.
It's perfect. It's like you left everybody with a smile.
And that's the idea. Like, I wanted to move you, you know, and I wanted at some points maybe for you to feel sad or at least introspective, but I don't want that to be your last impression of the album, you know, at least for this one. I think you should be left feeling happy and upbeat and excited to listen to it again.
Do you still give drum lessons as well?
Yeah, I do.
So what's one of the most important things you try to instill in your students?
Well, discipline is important, but the most important thing is to love doing it, right? So I tell people when we get into, you know, into exercises and into discipline practices, and, you know, maybe I feel like we've been doing that for a while just because they really needed it, or maybe they were lacking discipline in one area or another. I say, dude, okay, what's your practice routine like? And they'll tell me what they do, and they do these exercises, and they do exercises, and I say, dude, make sure to take time in every practice session to just do whatever it is on the drums that makes you love the drums. Play along to your favorite songs, or just jam out for 10 minutes to no metronome, you know, and with no intention of practicing any certain way, just love it. That's the most important part. You know, like when I get to the studio, the first thing that I do before I do anything is just put on songs that I like to play to or that I like to listen to and just play and just warm up my body and warm up my mind and get in a good mood, you know, put myself in a good mood and be happy to be playing drums.
And now I just want to mention to people that Aaron does have a YouTube channel as well as all kinds of socials. And we're going to be including links to all of that. Also, we're going to be posting Aaron's setup if you're interested in that. And we're also going to include your endorsements. So, Aaron, why we have you here, why don't you just give us a quick breakdown of some of these endorsements and what they mean to you?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm endorsed by Tama for drums, Mino cymbals, Vic Firth drumsticks, Remo drum heads, Hosa tech cables and whatnot, and I use Roland electronics as well for trigger and trigger module, I think. And then I have you know, some other people that I've had relationships with, like Snare Weight is one of them. I'm sure there are others that I haven't, that I'm not officially endorsed by, but, you know, like I have like working business relationships with. But anyway, yeah. So what they mean to me, wow. Well, I have a lot of importance that I put on having a great relationship with my AR people at said companies. So, you know, obviously the support as far as the gear that I need, you know, for playing shows and for recording and, you know, to just do my job and to play my instrument is great. And also the support as far as when, you know, I want things shared on social medias, you know, like a video, or they'll help, you know, promote our album in different ways. You know, for example, like Mino just flew me out and I shot a bunch of drum playthroughs for this album, you know, and my AR guy Ed Tama just helped me out tracking other videos to make for this album, you know, so things like that. And they'll share those videos and, you know, like send me gear to help participate in giveaway contests. Like I did a drum clinic at MI, the school up in LA a couple years ago, and they sent me some giveaway items to promote the clinic, and they're doing the same thing for this album. So, you know, there's that. And then also, I mean, having, you know, some of the biggest names in the game supporting you helps, you know, it helps, I guess the perspective that others have on you as far as your legitimacy. For example, like if I'm applying somewhere, or if you know, I'm looking for a gig and I'm trying to reach out to people, or I'm trying to land other endorsement deals. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to say I'm already backed by these companies, these people already support me. Yeah, it adds a level of, you know, professionalism that people see in you. So that helps out a lot for sure.
So there you guys have it. Aaron and his band Interloper have a new album out on Nuclear Blast Records called Search Party. They also, of course, have some merch to go along with it. And again, we're going to be posting all the links for all of you. And Aaron, it has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. And thank you again for stopping by today to talk to us here at Sick Drummer Magazine. And we wish you and the band all the best.
Thank you very much. Any opportunity to talk about myself for 45 minutes, I am jumping on. No, but for real, I love it and I appreciate it. And this has been great. Thank you so much.